Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast from WNYC, made on Varick Street.
And now, Soundcheck looks back at the pop charts of yesteryear and asks,
that was a hit?
Everybody was kung fu fighting.
They're coming to take me away, haha.
Time now for another installment of That Was a Hit, our series about baffling chart success. Ah, 1965. What a great year, full of memorable number one hits.
I can't get no satisfaction.
Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay.
Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy, and there is no place I'm going to.
And then there were these.
Mrs. Brown, you've got a lovely daughter. Girls as sharp as her are something rare.
I'm Henry the Eighth, I am. Henry the Eighth, I am, I am. I got married to the widow next door. She's been married seven times before. And
to help us understand how a band with the improbable name Herman's Hermits scored not one but two top hits that year, we are joined once again by Chris Malamphy. Chris, welcome back.
Thanks so much, John.
So, Herman's Hermits, they are clearly part of the British invasion.
Clearly.
That Mancunian accent is almost impenetrable at times.
Seriously. Yeah, Mancunian is the word. They are a Manchester band, Herman's Hermits. The voice you're hearing, of course, is the irrepressible Peter Noon. And
was he irrepressible?
Oh, he's pretty irrepressible. Okay. We'll talk about where his career went after this. That guy can't be kept down. In any case, once the Beatles broke in America in 1964, it really opened the floodgates. There's a reason why we call it the British invasion. And what was fascinating was that you didn't just have, you know, other Liverpudlian acts like Jerry and the Pacemakers. You didn't just have London acts like the Rolling Stones. You had a wave of anybody with a British accent suddenly had stock in America, which is the thing I find most fascinating about Herman's Hermits in particular. It's as if the more British they were, the better they did in America. We didn't just want them to be, you know, singing catchy songs. We wanted them to be really, really British.
And did the British want bands like that?
Less so. That's the funny thing. They had a bigger career in America, at least at their peak, than they did in England. If we want to take it back to the beginning briefly, and there's not much more beginning before this because they broke in 1964, their very first hit was a number one in England, and it's a hit written by Jerry Goffin and Carole King, the famed Brill Building songwriting duo, called I'm Into Something Good, and that topped the charts in England, and that kicked off their career, and it didn't do badly here in America either. It made the top 20. But that's when it really started to snowball, and you begin to see that in America – Peter Noon becomes something of a teen idol, and the band just takes off. They have far greater success in 1965 in America on the Billboard Hot 100 than they ever did in England, including singles that were released here that weren't even released in the UK, including the two we're about to talk about right now.
All right. So the first of them is Mrs. Brown, You've Got a Lovely Daughter. I mean, is he exaggerating the accent for...
I half wonder if he is.
This is a bit of improbable success from the British invasion band known as Herman's Hermits.
Mrs. Brown, you've got a lovely daughter. Girls as sharp as her are something rare. But it's sad, she doesn't love me now. She's made it clear enough, it ain't no good to pine. She wants to return those things I bought her. Tell her she can keep them. same. Things have changed. She doesn't love me now. She's made it clear enough. It ain't no good to part.
Herman's Hermits and Mrs. Brown, You've Got a Lovely Daughter. Number one hit for this British band here in the States. Couldn't get arrested back home in the UK, but huge here.
Yeah, and not even released as a single in the UK. They'd done okay on the UK charts, but they became a phenomenon here. What's crazy about that song in particular is that the band had no intention of releasing it as a single anywhere. They had been working several other singles, like I mentioned earlier, that kicked off with a Jerry Goffin, Carole King song. They didn't write their own stuff, so they were always looking for good material. They were working a couple of other singles in America. One was called Silhouettes. It was doing quite well and made the top 10. And then radio stations started picking up on this album cut, the Mrs. Brown song. And it kind of exploded. It kind of forced the label was MGM. It forced their hand to release it as a single.
The opening sound, that kind of skiffly, you know, muted guitar, getting towards almost a ukulele kind of
almost a ukulele, yeah.
That's a really distinctive sound, kind of an old-fashioned sound.
Very much so.
And as the Beatles were doing with Sgt. Pepper around this time, there was a lot of looking back at what the Brits call music hall.
Totally. That's what was so fascinating about when the British invasion broke. There was a wave of songs where the Americans were almost being sold music hall and vaudeville sounds by the British. There was another number one hit in late 1966 called Winchester Cathedral by a band that literally called themselves the New Vaudeville Band.
Right.
And then, of course, you hit 67, and that's when the Beatles take off with Sgt. Pepper. But there's a lot of that salesmanship of these old-timey sounds. Now, the funny thing about Mrs. Brown is it's not actually an old song. It sounds like one. But it was written in 1963 by a British gentleman named Trevor Peacock. It was originally recorded by the actor Tom Courtenay, a very well-known British actor. He was in Billy Liar, Dr. Zhivago. It was recorded for a British teleplay called The Lads. And his was the only single version that was ever released in England because, again, the Herman's Hermits version, not released in England. But when it was released in America, it exploded. It set a then record on the Billboard charts. It debuted at number 12 on the Hot 100, which was the highest debut in Hot 100 history to date.
Wow. To be surpassed
only a couple years later by Hey Jude, debuted at number 10. Yeah.
All right. But we're talking about Herman's Hermits' unlikely success on the charts. Our series, That Was a Hit. Chris Melanfi's with me, pop chart analyst, contributor to NPR Music Slate, and frequent guest here on Soundcheck. Their next hit is even more unlikely because this is something that looks back to that kind of, I mean, this is like, hey, music hall.
Right. Well, once they realized that this song that they never intended to release as a single became a number one hit, they said, okay, clearly the Americans want this music hall vibe. Let's find an actual old song. So they found a record from, no joke, 1911 that had been written by Fred Murray and R.P. Weston. And the song is called I'm Henry the Eighth I Am. Or if you're pronouncing it the way it's sung, it's I'm Henry the Eighth I Am. There's like an extra syllable in the Henry. It's not
it's
Henry.
It's like Henry.
Henry. It's like a three-syllable word.
As we would later hear with Ingerlin Swings, like
totally.
A pendulum do.
Yep.
This, an even more unlikely, number one hit for Herman's Hermits.
I'm Henry the Eighth I Am. Henry the Eighth I Am. I am. I got married to the widow next door. Seven times before, and everyone was an Henry. She wouldn't have a Willie or a Sam.
No, sir.
I'm her eighth old man, I'm Henry. Henry the eighth I am. Second verse, same as the first. I'm Henry the eighth I am. Henry the eighth I am, I am. I got married to the widow next door. She's been married seven times before, and everyone was an Henry. She wouldn't have a Willie or a Sam.
No, sir.
I'm her eighth old man, I'm Henry. Henry the eighth I am.
Yeah! Herman's Hermits, number one single in 1965, I'm Henry the Eighth I Am. I don't know where to begin. I tell you where I'll begin.
Sure.
Second verse, Same as the first.
I'm so glad you played that part because as best as I can tell, that is the first instance of a song of that phrase, which later became famous in punk. Joey Ramone openly extolled Herman's Hermits. He was a fan. And, you know, second verse, same as the first, which he threw into, I believe, was it Chino Was a Punk? He threw it into several songs.
It became like a trope.
It became a punk trope, yeah. And he totally picked it up from Herman's Hermits, from I'm Henry VIII, I Am.
So there's also, you know, for a song that is so pop and you know, has a half century of pop behind it, because as you say, a 1911 song, there's also, for British listeners, there's a little bit of a... You know, she won't have a Willie or a Sam because,
oh, yeah.
You know, there's a little...
It's a wink and a
double
nudge.
Entendre in the names, in the one of those names.
Right. I mean, just a couple years before this song went to number one, the movie Tom Jones had won Best Picture at the Oscars. Like, it was a good time for, you know, winking, you know, nudge, yeah. Nudge, wink, yeah. Wink, British humor. And this song is fitting right in that pocket.
So Joey Ramone was a fan. Obviously, he had lots of company because both of these songs, Mrs. Brown, You've Got a Lovely Daughter, and I'm Henry the Eighth, I Am, are number one hits, yep. In America. What becomes of Herman's Hermits?
I mean, you know, you don't have a year like that all the time. 65 was off the charts ridiculous for them. They had 7 Hot 100 hits. In 1965 alone, all of them were top tens. Also, it should be mentioned that they almost single-handedly helped to bring Mancunian, Manchester bands to the American shores. By the time Mrs. Brown went to number one, it was actually the third straight number one hit by a Manchester band. They directly followed up Freddie and the Dreamers' I'm Telling You Now and Wayne Fontana and the Mindbenders' Game of Love. They literally went number one back to back to back. So 65 was the absolute peak. 66, they did all right. They had like 3 more top 10 hits. In 67, they only had 1 top 10 hit, but it's an extremely well-remembered one. It's a song called There's a Kind of Hush. Which, if you're going to hear any song by Herman's Hermits on easy listening radio to this day, it might be that one.
It's a really good song. And you mentioned the new vaudeville band before with their song Winchester Cathedral. Uh-huh. The original of this is on that record.
Is it really?
Yes, I didn't know it is.
Yeah. So that song has many lives. The Carpenters covered it in the 70s. It's kind of eternal. And then finally, the group outlasted the 60s and broke up in 1971.
Okay. Now, we noticed that on Amazon... there are lots of outraged Amazon customers thinking they're buying Herman's Hermits originals when, in fact, they're getting Peter Noon redos.
Uh-huh.
So there is, you know, buyer beware.
There
are lots of versions of these songs out there.
There are. And Peter Noon, as I said before, I called him irrepressible. The guy has been touring still. He was 17 when these songs broke in 1965. He's pushing 70 now. He still tours. He has a radio show on Sirius XM. He re-recorded I'm Into Something Good for the soundtrack of the movie the Naked Gun in the 80s. So, yeah, Peter has gone back to his well many, many times.
But two instances of unexpected chart success for Peter Noon and his band Herman's Hermits. And Chris Melanfi, always a pleasure. Thanks very much.
I hope you enjoyed it, John.
There's a kind of hush all over the world. Tonight, all over the world, you can hear the sounds of lovers in love. You know what I mean? Just the two of us. Sight. There's nobody else, and I'm feeling good, just holding you tight. So listen very carefully, closer now, and you will see what I mean.
Join us online this Wednesday and Thursday evening to watch a live video feed of Gigstock, our spring mini festival of music and conversation, inspired by our daily Gig Alert. On Wednesday at 8 p.m., it's a lineup curated by the indie concert site Oh My Rockness and features two great New York rock bands, The Pains of Being Pure at Heart. And a band that released one of my favorite New York records from last year, Parquet Courts. Parquet Courts and The Pains of Being Pure at Heart, Gigstock, Day 1, presented by Oh My Rockness, this Wednesday night at 8 on soundcheck.org. Then Gigstock Day 2 is Thursday, also 8 p.m., and our video webcast that night will feature the Irish singer-songwriter James Vincent McMorrow. And music and conversation with Conor Oberst, the singer-songwriter known for his work under the name Bright Eyes. He'll play songs from his new album, Upside Down Mountain. Conor Oberst and James Vincent McMorrow, you can watch a live video stream of that on soundcheck.org on Thursday night at 8. If you love the Soundcheck podcast, consider showing your support with a one-time donation or become a monthly sustainer. Go to soundcheck.org and click on support. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.